702.
Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane.
Let's walk the talk.
Let's walk the talk indeed, and take a look at this. With conversations around migration gaining prominence over the years, either because of events such as Brexit and because of some of US President Trump's immigration policies, and to the fact that we can turn back home to developments around Shepherd Bushiri, the prophet Shepherd Bushiri and his wife Mary, being investigated on fraud and money laundering charges, and matters such as the number of passports that he has coming to national attention and shocking all of us. You know, why is this individual in possession of all these documents? Or why does this individual have access to the kind of access he has in our country? And, you know, what's his immigration status, for instance? So we saw Home Affairs, or the Minister of Home Affairs, Aaron Motsoaledi, being grilled by MPs in Parliament this week when he appeared before Parliament's Home Affairs Committee. But really what we're trying to have a discussion about is an ideal immigration for policy, ideal immigration policy for South Africa in a global age, the ideal way of communicating said policy to citizens, whilst of course being clear to avoid, you know, xenophobia or being xenophobic or inciting xenophobic sentiments, which quickly happens. You'll often experience in these types of conversations. But I'm really glad to welcome on the line immigration specialist at Expat Web, Marissa Jacobs. She is, in fact, the head of immigration and mobility at Expat Web. Thank you so much for joining us here on Weekend Breakfast. Really appreciate your time, Marissa.
Good morning, Refilwe. Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for coming through, Marissa. You are an immigration specialist. Why is a conversation on immigration policy so polarizing for many citizens, right? And it's often the citizens who tend to be in a better position in whichever countries you're having that conversation. What's so difficult, for example, is the Trump team and the Biden team, why is it difficult for them to come closer together? I use them as an example, setting up this conversation, to coming closer together to drawing up policies on immigration, for instance, that satisfy both groups and both parties. Just lay out for us what is fundamentally at stake.
It's such an interesting conversation to have, and I think immigration policy is always approached with such careful consideration when you're having this discussion. You mentioned Mashibe at the onset of the discussion, and I think that is one of the reasons why it's such a polarizing interaction to have around immigration. Is there's always examples of abuse of policy and poor interactions with foreign nationals in the country, and just unfortunate behavior that happens, and that often gets very publicized, and it's well known. The Gupta's are another example of where there's just complete abuse of the immigration policies. But if you look at the other side of things, immigration policy is used to enable foreign direct investment into the country.
Sure.
It's also used to be able to attract skills, which we've got a grave shortage of, not only in South Africa, but globally. There's a shortage of skills, and countries need to compete for those skills. And immigration policy needs to allow employers to be able to bring talent into the country. So there's both the good and the bad, and it's designing policy that allows you to attract skills, attract investment, while also taking care of society members that come to the country for economic benefit.
Yeah.
So it needs to be looked at holistically.
Sure. And, you know, you've touched on something so key, is that we often pay attention to immigration and immigration policies as citizens only when something has gone wrong, when something has, or when we find out that politicians, someone has curried favor or used their influence to gain certain advantages, right? When it comes to being able to secure a visa visa or permit of one kind or another. But we also know that politicians use the issue of migration to garner support or to galvanize a support base. And it happens here at home. It also happens internationally. So how do we then turn a conversation around on policy around migration to one that is dominated by citizens, the needs of the citizens, the interests of the citizens? Where do we start as ordinary people to educate ourselves and actually understand fundamentally what's happening here in South Africa? Where do we stand as a country? And how do I understand when I look at the Minister of Home Affairs in the Minister of Home Affairs having to account in Parliament, you know, to his colleagues, how do I understand the role of the Department of Home Affairs here in my country?
You know, I think it's a fantastic conversation to have. It is, like I mentioned before, the immigration policies in South Africa really, they're well-designed policy. There's always examples of abuse or administrative failings, as there is with any policy. But holistically, it's really well-designed in terms of being able to attract those investments, attracting skills. And there are many measures put in place in the policy to protect local jobs and to ensure that any foreign talent that does come in is enabled to transfer skills to local citizens and South Africans. And it's used to better the labour force in South Africa. Foreign skills is well known to create employment. And I think it's those conversations that we need to have more often is how do we leverage foreign investment? How do we leverage foreign talent and through our migration policies to upskill the workforce, to have a stronger labour force in South Africa, to have stronger organisations, a stronger economic outlook, and how do we compete for those skills to make sure that we, as South Africa, are in a better position to attract those skills rather than the next also competing for the same skills. So those are the conversations we should be having is the positivity around having a diverse labour market.
And, you know, obviously what we know and understand is that in many ways our Department of Home Affairs is that custodian, that protector of that immigration process, right? By being able to verify identity and status, the statuses of citizens and other persons who are actually other people that are actually in our country. To that end, you're in that unique position where a director and head of immigration and mobility at Expat Web, you're in that unique position where you're interfacing with Home Affairs specifically, you know, constantly. How dynamic is that department in dealing with people's applications, with you know, snags that come up in all the in application processes? We often see it as a department that, you know, is one that you have to brace yourself to interact with as a citizen. But from your professional perspective, what's happening in there, and how do we stack up against the other countries that you deal with in your professional life?
Sure. Yeah, I think it is, again, a clear example of the inefficiencies always get blown up, and those are the things that are interesting to talk about. But on a day-to-day basis, the Department of Home Affairs, in fact, I mean, if you look at the volume that they deal with and the budget that they have to deal that they get in terms of being able to enable legislation and the workforce that they have to process those applications, we in fact find them to be extremely efficient when you do your part. So you need to be able to submit compliant applications that tick all the boxes, have all your documentation in order, think ahead in terms of engaging with the department if there is unique circumstances around an application and make them aware of it up front. And then we find them to be extremely effective, both from a head office South Africa perspective as well as all the South African missions abroad also enable immigration legislation. If you're a foreign national who are coming to South Africa for the first time, you have to submit your visa application, for example, at your South African High Commission or embassy in your home country. And sure. So it's a wide variety of adjudicators who deal with the different applications. And from an administrative level, there's always examples of offices that are less effective. And I think currently the permanent residency section within the department is a very good example of a department that has fallen short and is being revamped at the moment to address those shortfalls and that extreme backlog. But on the other hand, if I can use the lockdown as an example, the department during that period absolutely made use of that time to buckle down, work on the backlog in terms of the temporary residence section and got all their files completely up to date. So, but those aren't things that get talked about, where there's been this extreme effort by the department to get things in order, where there's this massive effort by the Department of Higher Education and Training in terms of the research to update the new critical skills list, which is due to come out later this year or early next year, where there's hours and hours of work that goes into that and really good work.
That's a conversation that we'll definitely have to invite you back on the show to have, because it is incredibly incredibly key, right, that we keep sight of those developments. Now, once again, just to a point that you've made earlier on in the discussion, the fact that, you know, migration also serves to entrench or drive the needs and the interests of that of a country in attracting either the right talent or foreign direct investment. We know that our president Cyril Ramaphosa is on a huge investment drive. He's aiming for about 109 billion rand to get that to the country, but you know, you've in one of your articles online, you've cited Mauritius as a great example of a country that's been able to get all of these things right, and of course, its migration or immigration policy being a cornerstone in number one being a great investment and retirement option. What did they get right? If you can just recap for us and remind us, what did they get so right to secure that position that they currently enjoy?
Mauritius is a fantastic example. We speak to lots of South Africans who are interested in immigrating to Mauritius and expanding their businesses, and it's become a bit of a competing with South Africa as a new gateway to Africa, in a certain sense. And they've really positioned themselves well. If you look at their budget speech that they had earlier in the year, the budget speech specifically outlined how they look at attracting first of all, that they want to attract more foreign direct investment, and then it details out exactly how they're going to do this. They've lowered the investment thresholds in terms of getting residency in Mauritius through investment. So they've lowered the caps for that. They've lowered the caps in terms of purchasing property, so gaining residency through property investment, and in that way they've injected a lot of foreign funds into developing the property sector within the country. They've got specific legislation that to invest in technology into the country. So if you are opening a business or doing research in the technology field, they make special exemptions for guys who want to do that.
Sure.
They've done to attract families. So if your spouse or your children join you, to enable your spouse to also work in the country. So it's those kind of things that foreigners find extremely attractive when they're looking at a second home.
What really struck me when, and I referenced the US because, you know, global, we're a global community and everything was so highly connected. But it struck me that when conversations were happening just now, very recently, around about June, July, with the Trump administration threatening to revoke or do away with or set a higher threshold for student visas, and a lot of colleges there saying, hang on, if you actually do this, you'll chase away a very key source of income for our university. These international students actually finance so much at these universities. It's not a small thing at all to play around with those kinds of visa regulations. From on the continent as South Africa, where do we stand in terms of the number of student visas, people coming here for education opportunities, for instance, and I guess the sort of the money that comes along with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got a vibrant study visa regime in South Africa as well to attract foreign students. And we have very recently, there was additional directives issued. So if a foreign student, for instance, studies a critically skilled area within the country, they are now allowed to progress to permanent residency immediately to allow the country to retain those skills. So if someone has educated themselves in an area that we know we've got a shortage of, we want to be able to, so we don't want them to just come and study and then go back and go and use that skill elsewhere. We want them to stay here and become part of the labour force in South Africa. So they, so some great work has been done around that to keep those skills here. And interestingly, you mentioned the US. They've in fact done the opposite of Mauritius, and they've increased their threshold to be able to invest and gain citizenship in the US.
Yeah.
So you actually now need to invest more to be able to gain citizenship there.
It is incredibly interesting, and I guess that gives us that sets us up to have a think about the future and what you think is a progressive migration sort of policy, but also immigration policy and even attitude, right, for a developing country to adopt when you, obviously, through your head of immigration and mobility, got, you know, through that, if you look at it through your lens, you've got a very unique vantage point. What do you think we need to be setting ourselves up for as South Africa?
I think one of the interesting items around this is South Africa doesn't have a clear investment, citizenship through investment or residency through investment option. It's one of the things that many developing countries who are looking for investment have put in place to attract more investment. So I think that's definitely something that should be on the agenda to look at and to see if that isn't something that can enable us to bring more investment into the country. So that's definitely interesting. And then also because of this I keep on repeating the competing for global skills.
Sure.
We run the annual survey in South Africa around critical skills and what skills are employers most struggling to recruit in the country. And it's a significant amount of skills that they look for globally and can't find in South Africa. So legislation to more easily enable employers to be able to attract those skills to South Africa and retain them in South Africa is immensely important when you're competing for skills. And a skilled professional has the option of, am I going to go work in Australia versus South Africa? To take that roadblock out of the way in terms of being able to obtain visa status in the country definitely allows employers to search far wider and attract the best talent to enable them to grow business.
And of course, you can imagine the immediate refrain or pushback would be, well, with such a high unemployment rate, surely our priority ought to be to skill, upskill people that are here in dire circumstances and desperate for employment.
Absolutely. But how do you do that? How do you can't create skills from nothing. So you need to attract skills to come and give that upskilling and training in South Africa. And the talent must come from somewhere to develop those skills in South Africa. And foreign talent, in fact, create jobs in South Africa. It's a common misconception that they take jobs. They don't take jobs. They enable industries and grow industries and create jobs.
Really interesting perspective. Marissa Jacobs, thank you so much for your time this morning. Short conversation, but I think one that we can revisit as developments in your field come about. And if you'd keep us apprised, we'd really appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. That's Marissa Jacobs, Director, Head of Immigration and Mobility at Expat Web.